Le mie cose a Luigi Zanni.
Well, hello, good afternoon, welcome one and all. Merry Christmas!
You know, I was thinking earlier, I quite want to do some sort of a compilation of how Rachel starts the show.
It's good, right?
Because every time it comes out a different way and it's like, it's quite exciting.
I was about to say that's what she said, but I'm not lowering the tone this early.
Oh!
I'm not doing that to you this early.
I enjoyed that.
Thanks, babe. Thanks
for coming. I'm Olivia Cox. This is Rachel Downey.
Hi.
This is Pitch Talk on FUBAR Radio. We're live with you until 5 o'clock. We've got a jam-packed show as usual. I think we say that every week.
We do, but then we do have a jam-packed show.
We actually do. Last week we had
no
guests. This week we have two guests, so we're 200%... guestier. So we've got Zoe Smith
Lydia
coming
Cox,
in.
Cox, everyone.
24-year-old weightlifter, European bronze medalist and Commonwealth Games champion, followed by David Kingsbury, who is a PT and an author. He's been a PT since he was 18 years old.
I mean, I've been drinking since I was 18 years old. That's a definite from me, but that's amazing. Good work.
He's a personal trainer to the stars and works on films such as Les Mis, Thor, X-Men, The Wolverine. That's pretty epic.
That'd be amazing. I'd love that.
I didn't realise that.
This
I didn't even...
IMBD
you know,
page.
That is something that I've never really thought through because, of course, the actors must have to really get in shape.
Mm.
I once saw an interview with the actor doing Tarzan.
Yeah.
And it was a Q&A and he was asked... I'm not going to try and pronounce his name because it's Alex something Swedish. And he was asked what his training regime was like and his face just sort of clouded over and he went... I was hungry for 2 months. And he was basically like just training all day and not eating.
That's his job. That's what he's getting paid to do.
I know.
It's not like he's got like another job to go to and
tough
he's
life.
Starving.
Tough life, Alex.
Tough gig.
Okay, coming up on the show, first of all, is the sport headlines. Kicking off with F1, Lewis Hamilton has called on Monaco's organisers to bring changes around. Now, this is because...
Finally!
Yeah, there's been a bit of a unanimous call amongst a lot of the races that they need to adapt the Monaco Grand Prix track if it's to present exciting races. There's been chat of maybe more pit stops. I don't know. I think one of the main problems is that the cars, after the regulation changes of 2017, the cars are wider. So it's more difficult to overtake.
And you just can't overtake at Monaco.
Well, there's such skinny little roads.
Yeah, you can't overtake. And I didn't realise it's 76 years it's been going, the Monaco Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And you can't. It is incredibly boring. I mean, Fernando Alonso even called it the most boring ever. This year, because it was like their starting positions, what they qualified.
Yeah, they finished
in. It's ridiculous.
But apparently, that was all to do with the tyres, because the use of soft compound tyres that Pirelli had been asked to provide meant that they couldn't go quicker. I don't know how that affects overtaking.
No, but again, there's just no point.
Again, it's
because
quite,
you can't.
Yeah,
but I do like this as well. Hamilton, who lives in Monaco, he. This is what he has gone to press. He told Prince Albert II, and I like this already because the fact that he, in my head, he phoned him up. Obviously, he would have seen
you
him
know,
afterwards.
You know, I think he pretty much did because I read an article that said, I was chatting to Prince.
Yeah, Albert II, yeah.
Albert II. And I just thought that was a bit wanky.
Yeah,
carry on.
He said, but then Prince, they're always there anyway at the Monaco Grand Prix. Anyway, he said, I said to Prince Albert, I wish I could do Hamilton's accent right now. That would be good, wouldn't it?
I think it is very street. Drop your T's. No more H's.
I couldn't possibly. I said to Prince Albert the other day, maybe it's time to make the track longer. Do we change this great track and make it even better? Maybe it's got to be a different format.
Hang on, stop. Making it longer, how is that possibly going to change the fact that you can't overtake? You're just not going to be able to overtake for even longer.
The pain is just going to go on and on.
Thanks, Lou.
And he said the Brit also expects Ricciardo to agree a new deal at Red Bull. He said he's got a teammate, Max Verstappen, who is making a lot more money than him, but Daniel is more consistent.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Thanks.
Daniel is a bit more... I mean, that is not exactly rocket science.
I love Daniel Ricciardo.
Oh, I love Hamilton's insights there. The other thing that Hamilton was saying was that he was very glad that the beautiful grid girls were back.
Would he say beautiful grid boys, I wonder? I find the fact that he said beautiful quite condescending.
It is quite condescending, and I wonder how he referred to the grid kids.
Beautiful, it's...
lovely.
Hamilton...
I don't think he did refer to them at all whatsoever.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
Thanks for your input, Lou. Moving on to tennis.
Cheers, Lou.
The French Open has, of course, started, and Heather Watson, who is one of our big hopes for England, mm-hmm. she's making a comeback, which is exciting because she had her first win after a string of 9 losses in 10 games. So I think everyone was sort of starting to doubt. Is it fair to say that?
I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
9 losses out of 10. You do kind of think, is this for you?
I think that's actually on a par with my school tennis record, which went rapidly downhill after we had to do overhand serve rather than underhand.
I know. You see, I lost my tennis skills when I had to move it away from the garage.
Sorry, do you mean against a wall?
The garage was better.
What are you doing?
I played tennis.
No, you're not. Did you have a recipient or were you playing against the wall?
Playing against the wall.
That's not tennis.
Yes, it is. But yeah, my skills went downhill when I had to add another person.
Nightmare. I hate it when that happens with sport.
Yeah, exactly. I, you know what I do when it becomes a competition. But we are talking about the French Open. Great Britain's Carl Edmund has beaten Alex.
He's another good hopeful. Hang on. What did you say the surname was?
Carl Edmund.
Okay, everybody, how can we turn Murray's Mount and Hemman's Hill into Edmund's? There must be an E. Somebody must have done enough
She's
geography.
She's going again on this, isn't Edmund's, she? She's going again.
Like Harry Stack. Oh!
Edmund's, come on.
Edmund's Edge? That Ooh. Sounds very dramatic, producer Abby. Or was it producer Toby?
Toby,
thanks, Toby.
Edmund's Edge.
Good to have you back, mate.
Edmund's Edge?
Edmund's Edge.
I'll meet you at Edmund's Edge.
But that kind of makes it sound like you're on a cliff edge. Just sort of shimmy up,
bring
bum
me,
to bum.
Oh, yeah. Bring me my... Hang on, when you go up to a cliff edge, do you go up bum to bum with people? Can we just... What? I think, but...
Well, you wouldn't exactly fling yourself towards the edge, would you?
But, yeah, but That's you wouldn't go up bum
way.
To bum with someone, would you, Olivia?
I would
That's
inch.
The most ridiculous...
I would Ooh. Edge over the edge.
Hang on. Edmund's elevation.
Hang on, that sounds rude. That sounds really dirty. Sorry to say.
Edmund's elevation.
Edmund's eminence. Is that even a reference
that
to
itself,
a hill?
That in itself, I think, is a little naughty.
Oh, apparently it means a hill, according to Toby. Not sure what the byline credit is. But Toby says it's a hill. Okay, so Edmund's eminence. We're going with that. Carry on your story.
Serena Williams will make her return to Grand Slam tennis, obviously, today. And defending champion Rafael Nadal has gone through in straight sets.
Serena Williams, of course, the lovely lady who won beer pong at Meghan and Harry's wedding, who I've been waiting to mention this story. I read
Do
it.
Do you know what? You have. I'm glad we brought it to the table.
It's been on the show notes for about 3 weeks. Yeah. And I'm so happy. Wait, have they been married 3 weeks? Okay, no, 2 weeks. And I'm so happy I finally got to say it. I read it in Harper's Bazaar. And it made me lol. Serena Williams, who wore trainers underneath her dress, good girl, then introduced some beer pong and won. Of course she did.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked if she didn't.
I mean, if beer pong...
Even as a mother, that's pretty...
If the ping pong ball gets in the cup,
yeah,
you don't drink. If you miss it, you drink. Is that right?
No, if your competitor... See, this is another game where you have to play with another human.
Oh, God.
Nightmare. If they Total get it nightmare. Into your one of your cups, i.e. the cups in front of you, you have to take the ball out and drink it. Okay. I believe I've actually, shockingly, never... Actually, no, I have. I've once played beer pong, but it wasn't very successful.
See, I know you can do it with Prosecco. I'd rather do that.
Prosecco pong. Mm-hmm. Would that not create an epic amount of fizz?
Yeah. Potato, potato.
Rachel will just be there with her straw. Excuse me!
Out of the way!
I'm here!
Someone
called for a straw.
Sick note is here.
Yeah, I forgot about sick note. Yeah. Okay, in athletics, British sprinter Rhys Prescott came within 0.1 seconds of Linford Christie's 100 metre British record. Although it was wind assisted. I was reading
step.
This. Yeah. Well, that was mighty slow. So he was just under 9 seconds, I believe. What was Linford Christie's record? Was it 9 seconds or 10 seconds? Whatever it was, Rhys Prescott, who is only 22 years old, came within 0.1 seconds. Well done, him.
Yeah, congratulations.
Rachel's got nothing to say about
Must
that.
Must have. I've got absolutely nothing because we haven't got the actual right numbers in front of us, whoever printed this up. But 10, I mean, a 10 metre.
This is a bit like Anchorman.
It's
so it goes funny. On the screen, it's said.
It's so cute, because they were like, oh no, what are the numbers? But I'll move on swiftly, shall
yeah,
I?
Yeah, do.
Cricket. Three England players have been accused of spot fixing in, I think it's pronounced a Chennai test. So basically, there was an Al Jazeera documentary claiming that three England players were involved in spot fixing. The claim also includes corruption allegation against two Australian players.
Australian cricket is not having a whale of a time.
It's not having a good time at all. But it's interesting how off the back, when all the controversy around Sandpapergate with the Australian papers players, the England players, everyone came up saying it's bad. Da, 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 da. So it's very interesting. This has come up now as well. England head coach Trevor Bayliss has described the claims as outrageous. England Cricket Board have denied that players had any involvement.
Of course,
Captain
they have.
Joe Root also hit out at the claims made in the Al Jazeera documentary, but the ICC have said that a full investigation is underway.
Do you think that this is a little bit like, so my reference, last week we discussed a little bit about Roger, whoever, the Russian who had apparently been very, very big in doping and cycling, and I think he was the head of anti-doping but secretly was sort of helping the doping. And he came out and said quite controversially in a Netflix documentary, everybody's doing it. Mm-hmm. There is not a single cyclist who is not doping. Do you think that maybe in cricket there is not a single team that's not cheating?
No.
I know that was a really punchy thing to say.
Yeah, and I don't at all. And there might be elements of things, maybe.
But it just seems to be coming through from so many different teams. And every single team goes, shock, horror, I can't believe you guys did that. And then they get found out themselves. There just seems to be a lack of integrity.
I mean, this was done 17 months ago.
So,
and obviously the documentary. Yeah, it was. I mean, Al Jazeera, I'd actually like to see the documentary, because obviously they'd have to be able to back it up. They couldn't just come up with allegations. In the programme, Anil Munawar, an alleged member of India's notorious crime syndicate, D Company, tells an undercover reporter posing as a businessman that certain England players agreed to manipulate the number of runs scored in the bracket, thereby assisting illegal bookmakers on the subcontinent in setting their odds.
That's quite a niche accusation.
It's claimed in the film that a wealthy investor in a possession of prior information can make over £1 million per game, while a corrupt player can earn six figures. I can't comment on it. I mean, I like to think in cricket it's not rife. It's something that has damaged Australia.
From what I have read, there is a lot of ball tampering to a lesser degree, you know,
the whole shiny on the trousers.
It's just sort of don't get caught. But I mean, silly little schoolboy things, that's fine. As we said, whenever it actually happened a few months ago.
Yeah.
The forethought of tampering is quite another.
But there have been rumours of this, and I don't know, it'd be quite interesting if it is to do with this game. There was rumours of a game, a test match, quite a few years ago, when they say if you look back at it, you'll be able to see things. And I think that's the only way to know, is to get the ICC to look back properly. But I don't know, it'd be interesting. Do you know what? I will try to catch that Al Jazeera documentary to see what they say.
I do have some other cricket news, which is a bit more positive. South Africa have named Siya as their first black skipper for the three-match series against England next month. Now, this is their first ever black skipper.
Amazing.
And is, especially for a country like South Africa, which has really struggled in the past with racial issues, mm-hmm. To actually make this stand, I think, is quite a positive suggestion. That
incredibly positive, yeah.
Perhaps throughout the whole of sport, we really are listening up.
Yeah, slowly but surely. The fact that there's only one they've employed black skipper.
There is one, and it is the first, but it's the first.
Yes, and exactly, and it's better. Yeah,
it's better than the
moving
none.
Forward. Yeah, moving forward, very, very, very slowly. But it's
it,
good.
It is
and in
South
a country
Africa.
Like that, yes, exactly. So that's very positive.
I know, thanks.
You're like, thank you very much, Rach.
Thank you, I did try.
I'm here a week.
You can now move on to football.
Your favourite subject.
I'm just waiting for rugby, frankly.
Yeah, I know. Oh, and we'll be talking about the rugby sevens as well a bit later. Liverpool have agreed to sign Monaco midfielder Fabinho in a deal that could be worth more than £40 million. The Brazilian midfielder, he said that he's really excited. This is something I always wanted. This is a giant of a team. A club of this size coming after my services. I didn't have to think about coming taking over. And Jurgen Klopp has moved quickly, obviously, after Saturday's 3-1 Champions League final defeat to Real Madrid, which is something we'll talk about now, actually, and we've been touching on this a little bit. First of all, more than 455,000 people have signed a petition calling for UEFA and FIFA to punish Sergio Ramos for hurting Mohamed Salah during Saturday's night Champions League final clash. Again, don't know if much. Something needs to be done for that. They say Sergio Ramos intentionally hurt Salah. So it'll be quite interesting to see what happens with UEFA. I don't think anything. And more importantly, we were talking about Liverpool's goalkeeper, Loris Karius. He's been sent packing. He's gone away on holiday.
Do you think this was a bit of an enforced holiday?
Yeah. Okay. But it is, you know, the summer break anyway for everyone, if not involved in World Cup. Liverpool keeper, who gifted Real Madrid two duty-free howlers in Kiev, made a hasty departure from Manchester Airport after Saturday's meltdown. The 24-year-old's Anfield exit cannot be too far away. Mm. Will he be leaving Liverpool? I don't know.
I mean, as a non-football fan, the howlers that I was informed about were quite shocking.
Yes.
Not really something you expect from that level of football.
Top flight football, no way.
However, I do think that there is an element of the players are involved in that because they shouldn't have let it get to the goalkeeper. However, your goalkeeper is your last line of defence, and everyone has to be working as a team. And clearly there was something, I don't know, his mind just didn't seem to be on the game.
It was just too, it was most, yeah, no one in the Premier
no
League
words.
In a goalkeeper as a goalkeeper should do that. I mean, yeah. If you're a goalkeeper, you're either the hero or the villain out of the game
but a lot of the time. He made it way too easy to make him the villain.
He did. He literally gifted Real Madrid. He lost that. He lost that Champions League. He was in tears in the final whistle and he has apologised to fans. It says here, moving out of the spotlight is no bad thing, just on a domestic level, going outside of the country where people would have been most interested in the game. He is looking now to maybe take some time away. His fault, basically. And I think in Liverpool, he's probably one of the most hated men at the moment.
Yeah, one of my cousins is an avid Liverpool supporter, sort of breathes and lives and dies by Liverpool, and he was literally in mourning the next day. So I can imagine in Liverpool it's a pretty tense feeling right now.
If it wasn't for him, they wouldn't have lost. England footballer Raheem Sterling has defended his new tattoo of a gun, saying it has a deeper meaning and refers to his late father. Anti-gun campaigners have criticised the Manchester City forward after he shared a photo of himself with a tattoo of an M16 assault rifle on his leg. The image has been called totally unacceptable and sickening. What do you think?
Right, so I'm pretty divided on this one. On the one side, it's his body. He should be allowed to do what he wants. Whether or not there was real forethought in this, whether it was just a bit of a spur of the moment, might have been a bit of an emotionally led tattoo. Possibly he didn't really think it through. It is his body and he should have the right to do to his body as he wishes. However, he is in the public eye. He is paid an awful lot of money for the job he does in the public eye and gets the privilege of being with that. So he does have a certain element of responsibility, which leads me to my conclusion. If I were to advise him, I would have said, idiot, do it somewhere that no one's going to see it when you're playing football. Do it on your upper thigh, do it on your hip, do it below your shirt. I don't think showing it for all the world to see every football match, because obviously it's a divisive issue.
It
was always going to be a bit of a controversial one.
He has said it reflects a vow he made to never touch a gun after his father was shot dead when he was just a boy. His father was killed in Kingston, Jamaica. Do you not think, therefore, knowing that, the actual symbol of this gun isn't a violent symbol?
It's not, but it can be very easily taken to be.
But we know the real reason behind it.
But considering how many young people will follow him, and not necessarily, when you just see that image, I think that's where people are coming from. Just seeing someone of that position with a symbol of a gun, which could be seen to incite or to endorse gun crime. Until you look into it, that immediate thought is not great.
It's not, but then again, once you know what it is, it shouldn't. You know what it is. You know it's not a violent purpose.
It's just such a provocative thing. Why would you put it in such a public place?
but he probably wasn't thinking about everyone else. Again, back to what you're saying, but
this
at
is
the
why
same
I'm on
time,
the fence, because it is his body, and if it does mean something to him, fine.
A picture of a gun doesn't turn a kid to gun violence, so I really
no,
don't
it doesn't.
See
but
the,
it could be seen to endorse gun and gun crime.
So I don't think so. I just see it's.
But if someone had a heroin needle or had a needle tattooed on them.
But then again, once you, it's up to interpretation.
I don't know. I think it depends what angle you're coming from, and I think it. But the thing is, it will upset a lot of people, and that's why I think just put it somewhere that no one's going to see it.
Just hide
just
it.
Just put it away,
Sterling. Come on,
yeah,
Sterling.
Come on. It's not rocket science. Just don't upset the mothers.
No, don't upset the mothers. Poor mothers, eh? We've actually got some highlights of from the Champions League, the turmoil of the Champions League. We'll have a little breather, a little listen, and we'll be back in a few moments.
Cross sends it forward here towards Benzema. He's got the option to Marcelo. Oh! And Carrier, Sarge got in.
Oh no.
Nice ball by Kroos, makes a good run, he's onside Benzema, but Carrius picks it off easy enough, and as he throws it out there,
he's read him.
Milner across to take the corner, and he was trying to G up the Liverpool fans on the way out there, Milner. Van Dijk and Lovren up from the back, and it goes towards Lovren, who gets up high in it. Casemiro, there is Marcelo, three in the box waiting for the cross, and it was Bale. What about that from Gareth Bale, off the bench with a fabulous finish. Real Madrid 2, Liverpool 1, a classic Champions League final goal from Gareth Bale.
Oh, what a hit that is from Gareth Bale. Oh, it's an absolute beaut.
Chan's got to bring some new energy.
Oh, there's a shot. Oh, he's dropped it. It's Gareth Bale again, and it's a howler from Karius. Two goalkeeping errors tonight by Karius have cost Liverpool so dear in the Champions League final. It's lucky 13 for Real Madrid, and they are still very much the kings of European football.
Pitch Talk with Olivia Cox and Rachel Daly.
I would like to know who does that meh at the end. It's something I've always wanted to
do. Do you not think it's a bit computer generated?
I don't know. I'd like to think there's a voiceover artist purely employed for her.
How many times are you going to do that?
I don't know, but it's really satisfying.
I would just like to point out that everybody who reported back to me on the Champions League and went on about it being a howler of a goal, I've now heard from the horse's mouth that the commentator said it, so you weren't being original. I thought everyone
copy
had just
pasted.
Come upon this brilliant terminology, but no.
Copy and pasted.
Copycats.
Yeah. But I'm cut. You're like, I just had to get that out of my system.
Yeah.
We have a... I almost hit myself with the mic. I'm very excited, that's why. In the studio right now, we've got Zoe Smith. I like how we've got your age written in this as well. I'm going to just say it. 24-year-old weightlifter, a European bronze medalist and a Commonwealth Games champion. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's so good to have you here. Just reading all of this as well, and here we've got at 16 you became the first ever English woman to win a Commonwealth Games weightlifting medal.
Wow.
16,
that's quite an accolade.
It's funny because it used to be like this whole thing. I used to be this like child female weightlifter, and it was like a proper like big deal because I was so young. And now I think people have just started including my age in everything that I do, and now
50.
I'm not young anymore.
Yeah, you're right.
So yeah, like, great, thank you.
Yeah, calm it down now. Yeah. So how did you get involved first with weightlifting? Is this something other people in your family did? How?
No, I'm the first, maybe of many generations. I don't know yet to do weightlifting. Yeah. So I used to do gymnastics like a normal girl.
Normal girl.
It was quite niche when I started doing weightlifting. I was training at a club that's got a weightlifting gym underneath, and my coach, my gymnastics coach at the time, in no uncertain terms, said to me, well, you're probably not going to go to the Olympics for gymnastics, so maybe give weightlifting a try, which at the time is very hurtful.
And how old
joking.
Were you then? How old
I was 12 when I started.
Wow. So that means, was it always your goal? Did you always have that in your sights? You wanted to get to the Olympics?
Not really, to be honest. It's not really, it's like sports, something I've always done. I've always enjoyed it. My mum started taking me to like swimming lessons when I was about, when I was very young, like six, maybe younger. I've just always been an active child. So sport was just something I have always done growing up. Never really considered an Olympics might be something that, like, to be honest, I used to compete in gymnastics at like a very low level, like club competitions. And I was like horrifically nervous for those. So like the Olympics was never even something I considered doing or thought about. But weightlifting just happened to pop up. Like, you know, if you've made it as a gymnast by the time you're about 12, to be fair. And I know I just didn't have the natural ability that some of these girls did. So to be fair, I was like, okay, I'm going to turn my hand to something else that I might be a bit better at. And I just fell in love with weightlifting. It is so much fun. I mean, I say that, like, it has its moments. It's tough too. But I just took to it fairly naturally, I like to think. And I've just been doing it ever since. I did my first international competition within a year of starting weightlifting. So I was like,
I think I'm good at this.
All right.
Yeah. I think I'm a keeper.
Absolutely.
So what was it like going from gymnastics? Because that's something where presumably it's pretty much all body weight.
Yeah.
Going from that to actually lifting something, even a small something, how did you begin to adapt to that?
Gymnastics is such a great sport because it just, from a young age, it just kind of like teaches you sort of like body awareness and body weight strength and things like that. So I was quite strong just from lifting my own body weight and stuff. Like, you've got to have some strength to like get yourself up on the bars.
Absolutely. I mean, if you even think about, say, as a child, what you'd be about 35, 40 kilos?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, that's quite heavy, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean,
especially
if I was to go and pick
like
up a dumbbell, it would not be 40 kilos.
No.
just so everybody knows. Oh, God. So actually, you probably did have quite a lot of inner strength. It's just almost translating that to the new stuff.
Yeah,
equipment.
And I like to think I took to it fairly comfortably, but I don't know. If you look on my Instagram, there's what I think it was probably like last year. Now you've got to scroll back a little bit of a way, but I don't post that often anyway. There's a video of like one of my first sessions of weightlifting, and I just look like, I like to think I've always been sort of like short and stocky, but this video says differently. I was like long and gangly, and aww, I was like lifting this bar and my knees were sort of like knocking together.
Yeah.
It was just so extremely awkward looking. If that awkward looking child can do weightlifting, so can anyone, it turns out.
I love
out.
That. So can absolutely anyone.
And then you've obviously been very, very successful. How does it feel to translate from something that you possibly saw as a bit of a hobby into actually turning it into essentially your career and standing in front of hundreds and thousands of people?
Yeah.
How do you do that as a young person?
I don't know. I suppose because it's something I grew up with, it has never felt that strange to me. Like I say, my first international competition, it was only like a youth comp, but was within the first year of me starting weightlifting. So it's something I was just thrown into very quickly and just kind of like, I'm lucky that I've been to, I'm so fortunate to have competed at the London Olympics. It was absolutely amazing.
Like, I bet that was
an experience. Absolutely
I mean,
incredible.
To actually compete on your home soil.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's like, that's next level.
That is the and that's the biggest audience I've obviously ever competed in front of. But when you're competing, it's just you're so in the zone. It was kind of only after the actual event that it sort of sunk in how big, how many people were there watching, and the support that they were giving was amazing, obviously, because home crowd athlete that's sort of like going for like national records and stuff, they really got behind me. It was amazing. And I'm assuming, like, I don't think weightlifting's got that many fans, so I think it's just people that came because they happened to have the opportunity to, but they really, really got into it. It was amazing. I just didn't really think about it at the time because you're so focused when you're competing. It really is just you and the bar a lot of the time, so you just kind of go for it, and then you put the bar down and you think, crikey, that is a lot of people. I'm kind of glad that I didn't really register.
Kind of nervous now.
Yeah. By that point, it's done.
Done, dusty.
Quite a lot of weight, presumably. What kind of, can I ask that? What kind of weights are you lifting?
So my best lifts are, I can only work in kilos, unfortunately.
That's fine.
Which is
I work
not,
in kilos.
You know kilos?
I think we can, if there are any confusions, then tweet us and we'll convert for you.
Olivia will convert.
No, Abby will convert.
I'm sure we've got calculators in our face. So my best snatch, which is like from the floor to overhead, is 97 kilos. And best clean and jerk. Best clean, so like which is to your chest, basically. So you sort of like take it off the floor, rest it on your chest, and then the jerk is the bit that comes after, the bit that sort of...
That must be the scary bit, because that's scary, when it kind of goes over your head.
Yeah. So I've nearly clean and jerked 128. I got it above my head, but there's a rule in weightlifting that means you can't sort of like wobble your elbows around, which I did, so it wasn't allowed. But I like to think like clean and jerked 128.
Why can't you wobble your elbows? Do you have to have them locked out?
Yeah, it's right. One of those rules. It's like,
is
it's
that a safety
one
thing?
I don't know, to be honest. I think it's one of those rules that kind of, I think it, like, there used to be more lifts in weightlifting, and it was used as one of the differentiating factors, like between a press and a jerk. But now we don't have a clean and press anymore. Yeah. I'm boring you with some proper old school weightlifting stuff.
I'm enjoying this because I'm thinking of the piddly little dumbbells that I got earlier on today. Just in case anybody would like to know, 97 kilos is 15 stone, which is also 213 pounds.
That's crazy.
I mean, that's a solid person and a half.
So how often do you have to train? Like, is this, are these kind of like weights you have to deal with all the time?
No, these are very infrequent. I wish I could lift like that all the time, but I would be more broken than I kind of already am. So we sort of train up to about 80%. We kind of like sit around 80% in our day-to-day training. We don't do loads of reps or anything. It's just sort of like, we'll do like 5 reps at max, which is, to me, that's cardio. Like, that is too many reps. And sort of like on a good day, like we'll sort of push maybe to like 1 or 2 decent singles. So like maybe in training go up to like 95%, maybe max out if our program allows it, but not really. Like I prefer to save that for the platform. Because it's nice, you've got a bit more like, got a bit of adrenaline, a bit more energy under your belt, I think.
A little bit of will it, won't it?
Yeah, am I, aren't I? Yeah.
And to be honest, just the fear of failure.
I don't want to do this. Yeah. I'm going to do it.
So exactly. What makes up your training program? Because presumably lifting is a lot of it, but do you do cardio alongside it or smaller weights? Are you literally just in front of that bar?
Pretty much, yeah. So like,
that's
obviously
terrifying.
Do squats and pulls and things like that. But it is predominantly just very pure weightlifting. It's very unadulterated by any cardio or anything like that.
And are you training different muscle groups or just one muscle group?
So it will be different muscle groups. Obviously, legs are an important one. Obviously, I've got like the world's biggest like quads and bum.
Good girl.
Goals. It's difficult to buy jeans.
Maybe that's a niche. You could start a brand.
I think, to be honest, I think in the States, not so much here, but a weightlifter did start like making like jeans that would fit the athletic body, and when I say athletic, I mean totally the opposite. Like just, like
I mean,
chunky
there
body.
Really is, no, there's something to be said for it because I remember back in the day buying leggings, and they would basically fit you if you were all the way up, all the way down, straight, thin as a pancake.
Yeah,
hadn't walked even a mile.
Literally. Yeah, yeah. However, now there are brands like Gymshark, which are really celebrating the fact that we do have an ass because we squat, and I mean, some
we
more
should.
Than others, some weights, some basically none. but you know, working out develops muscles, so yes, we should have jeans and leggings and stuff that fit us.
Yeah, absolutely, and it is. It's becoming more of a like known thing, I think, that like I think since Instagram, the rise of Instagram and the Kardashians, obviously everyone wants a bum now. So I feel like I was slightly ahead of the curve there. Puns.
Good girl. Like this. Yeah. We like a lot of puns on this show. And a lot of women, we talk about women that lift. A lot of women are lifting now. They are using weights. And I think, did we mention this last week? Sometimes it's quite a taboo that you think, oh, I won't lift a weight because I'll.
You think you'll bulk out.
Yeah.
Or you're even scared to go in the weight room.
Yeah.
I think that's probably, from my experience anyway, I think going into the weight room is more of like
don't know what you're going to do.
An issue than actually bulking up. There was a time, I think, where everyone was like, oh, I don't want to get too bulky. But now it seems like people are really embracing the whole, like, yeah, I lift look, yeah, which is amazing. I think that's
hashtag
awesome.
Hashtag girl gaze, hashtag girls who train.
Hashtag girls who lift.
Yeah. All the emojis. Girls.
All of them. Hashtag fit for
the peach. You can't get the peach emoji.
So excited about these hashtags, I can tell.
I'd love to be able to use the peach one, though, my mother, tell you. That's what I'd love to do.
I love the peach. That's such a good emoji.
It's a great one. Dream. I use it too often.
As well you should.
Yes. Oh, God, yes. So moving forward, what are you training for at the moment and what are you hoping for?
So at the moment, I'm not having a break from weightlifting as such, but I've got exams at the moment. I'm just doing my A-levels like 6 years too late or something, which is
great gravy. You're doing them, though.
Yeah, finally getting them done. But after the summer, during the summer, I'm going to be straight back into the gym, just off the back of the Commonwealth Games. It's kind of nice to have a little bit of downtime as well and kind of figure out what my goals are going to be. So I've kind of figured that out. And obviously, I'd love to compete at the Tokyo Olympics in 2 years. 2 years. Wow, that's just comes around so quickly.
Is that quite a short lead time for you?
Absolutely. It's funny because
for me, 2 years is quite a long way.
When you work in like competitions and stuff, though, in sports, 2 years, like you start working in like 2 year cycles. So just had the Commonwealth Games, which is, well, that's over now. So it's the beginning of a new 2 year cycle leading up to the Olympics. And that's sort of broken down into the qualification events because you've got to do X number of competitions to compete at the Olympics. Just for qualification and stuff. And this is across all countries as well. Probably all sports. So they'll all have a slightly different qualification procedure. But ours means you've got to compete in, I think, at least 4 competitions.
My God,
so
Zoe, get
worlds.
Into the gym right now. You're wasting time, girl.
I know. Precious time.
I'm stressing myself out.
Don't do it. Yeah. We're not worth it. Well, Zoe, thank you so, so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's encouraged me to start lifting.
Yes.
But
she damn well should. I'm going to whip her ass into the gym. She keeps going for these long runs. I think we need to break that up a bit.
Yeah, we do. Could you help?
Yeah, thanks, we will. Okay. Yes. Thanks very much, Zoe. Yeah,
thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
So we are going to leave you with a Rugby Sevens interview. And then after that, we're actually going to chat some rugby. Olivia's very excited about this as well. So don't go anywhere. Back very shortly.
Okay, we're here with Alex Davis and Charlie Hayter of England Rugby Sevens, ahead of the HSBC London Sevens.
Describe a typical training day.
Rugby in the morning starts at about 9 o'clock for roughly sort of 60 to 90 minutes, a defence session or attack focus session. We've just done a kickoff session here today after a bit of lunch, some physio treatment over that break, gym in the afternoon where we're sort of looking at some power and strength work.
I keep hearing about death zone training. Talk to us a bit about that.
Yeah, so it's that's our normally our Tuesday session. So it's to take us out of our comfort zone and make us make hard decisions under that pressure, under that fatigue. So we're normally going about 30% harder than we go in a game. Cole, get yourself there mentally and physically and see if you can execute the skill.
It's a bit like a war zone at the end of it, so just bodies, yeah.
Does nutrition play an important part?
We've got a nutritionist who comes in sort of every 6 weeks, roughly. He'll do our skin folds, make sure everyone's sort of behaving themselves, eating the right foods. We have a sort of ethos here, which is food first. Now and then supplements play a role in what we do in our day-to-day training, but most time if we can we'll always get our food in.
So psychologically, how do you actually prepare on a match day?
There's a psychologist who comes in, helps us out. She's been working with us for like 4 years now. So having 6 games in a weekend, having to get yourself through the highs and lows mentally and physically, probably one of the biggest challenges in the game.
How do you come down after a match?
Some guys, I think Charlie used to have this mechanism where he'd just stick his head in a bucket of cold water just to cool himself down. Other guys like screaming and shouting. Just finding out your routine and your process pre-game and post-game is really important.
How much interaction do you have with the women's side?
Doing the same tournaments together, so Dubai at the same tournaments and stuff. We'll do a shared jersey presentation, so we'll all come together for that sort of thing. And then over the Christmas period, we did a lot of training together, so the men and women joined up, learned a lot from each other in that period.
Last season, we're immensely proud of. To finish second in the world overall was exceptional. We've been building really nicely for these next few tournaments, culminating in the World Cup in July, and hopefully we'll be able to go out there and come back with the cup.
Absolutely, I really hope they will. Sorry, I took a big mouthful of tea at a very inopportune moment.
Because I said I like a good prop, you're now using it.
I'm just overusing it. So that was Charlie and Alex. And yes, Rachel and I went down to the Lensbury in Teddington. to the England Rugby Sevens training ground. Now, I have to say, that was a mouthful to say. You have no idea how many takes it took us. I actually had to hand it over to Rachel in the end. Because there were so many sevens and mentions of rugby, and it was just all overexciting. And then, of course, it was a big weekend for England Rugby because they... It was a big weekend in quite a bad way, I have to say. I went to see England v Barbarians. Now, normally, that's a bit of a foregone conclusion. The Barbarians, if you don't know, are a team made up of lots of different internationals, basically whoever is available at the time. They play, generally they play England, they do play some other sides. And normally, because they are this sort of moggy team, just slung together, they normally lose quite badly. Unfortunately, England chose to lose this time, and it was a terrible, terrible defeat. It was 63 to the Barbarians, 45 to England. And Eddie Jones... Yeah, he kind of tried to say that it was the loss of 15 players from that big Exeter and Saracens Cup game the day before. There were also a few players that were forced out of position, like Mike Brown was on the wing. Frankly, I think they just took it a bit too easy and decided
they just played well at all.
It was an exciting game, I have to say. For a Barbarians game, it was good to see so much action. That kind of scoreline. It was a fourth successive defeat under Eddie, and actually never before have England conceded more points at Twickenham. So in that way, it was really bad, but it was a very enjoyable day out because you got to see so
Livy
much
had a very good
so
afternoon.
Much action, and it was an exciting game, of course, for Chris Ashton, who's been looking to make his England comeback. He scored three tries, although he's probably unlikely to have won much space in Eddie Jones's heart with his famous Ash the Splash dives. And that was my take on the rugby from Sunday. And now we move on to our second guest.
Yay!
David Kingsbury in the studio. Another young man, but it's because we keep being inundated with all these ages. You've been a PT since you were 18 years old.
Exactly, yeah. So I've been a personal trainer for a long time now. Yeah. Obviously not so young anymore. I've been doing it quite a long time. But yeah, so I started at 18 years old, straight out of college, and got my qualifications then. Went straight into it, worked in a number of gyms and things like that. And then that's when I eventually, set up my own personal training studio, which is at the Film Studios at Pinewood, where I've been for, 8-9 years, something like that now. So a long time there now, yeah.
Well, can we talk about this? So you're a personal trainer, says here, to the stars, and you've worked on many films. You've worked on Les Mis, Thor, X-Men and the Wolverine. I just want to get in my head, first of all, have you ever worked in films as a body double, have you always come in to train others?
Exactly, yeah. So quite normally in that situation, the personal trainers would have been a stunt person or they would have, perhaps been, involved with it in some way. But, my start within the industry was actually opening my own gym at the film studio. There was no gyms there.
Was it on purpose at the film studios? Clever man.
I mean, there was no harm in having it in the studio. I'll say that.
Was that unrelated? Were you training normal people?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, I mean, my intention was always to just open a successful personal training studio. And I'd spoke to a number of people about, my plans and what I wanted to do and everything else. And one of the guys I was working with, he actually worked at the film studio, and he said that if I was interested, he could put me in touch with the property department at the film studio, and they'd be able to find me a space there. So I called them up, and they had this tiny little, it was half a squash court. So it was the old, because at Pinewood, there's this really old house.
It's so niche,
isn't it? But it's fitness, so, it's got that.
It worked.
But literally, they'd halved this room, so it was just the top half. The bottom half was storage, and I was in the top half. So I set up a small personal training space there, and then sort of gradually worked my way up, working through, working with people who work on the film. So, everyone from plasterers, electrician, the film world is huge. Yeah. Also, there's a lot of businesses based at Pinewood too. So worked with everyone in the industry, and then started working with producers, directors and things like that. And then began work, in films. And then I got my first full-time film contract, which was Snow White and the Huntsman. I'd done bits and pieces before, but that was my first real full-time contract. And I was very excited, obviously. Yeah. It was a big moment for me because it's sort of not every, but I'd say most personal trainers dream, I know mine, to work at the sort of the pinnacle with in the films. And
yeah.
it's been amazing that, traveling the world and working in so many different places with so many different people. It's fantastic.
So when you're working with an actor or someone working towards a film, are you mainly looking for aesthetic changes, or is it actually getting them fitter? Is it often for roles where they'll actually have to run around?
Yeah, absolutely. So the goal, you know, the goals are really different depending on the individual and the film that I'm working on. Mm. So they can be aesthetics, absolutely. So films like The Wolverine, for example, and X-Men, you know, prime examples of where shirtless body is like, that's the goal.
Yes. You know, it's to have the best. I think we both know what you're talking about.
We understand.
Like, if your body is a billboard on a billboard in every major city in the world, then, you know, that's what you want to do. You want to look good. But then there are a lot of other films that I've worked on as well where it's performance based. I mean, even on films like The Wolverine, they're quite stunt heavy as well. So you have to be able to move too. Mm. But then there are other films where I'm hired and there's no shirtless, there's no, you know, nudity whatsoever. And
God, those films.
I know.
And so rub it.
Exactly, the worst kind of films. No, so then it's like, it can be performance-based. So last year I did a film, they're doing a remake of Dumbo, and I worked on that, and a lot of that was athletic and performance-based.
Dumbo?
Yeah, they're doing a remake of Dumbo,
yes. I
didn't
know this. Yeah. Is this a huge spoiler? Are we allowed to know that they're doing a remake of Dumbo?
Well, it's common knowledge that they're doing a remake of Dumbo. Yeah. I can't say
I'm
any more
so
than that,
happy.
But I can say they're doing a remake, yeah. And then,
oh, wow. Did you work with the elephant?
I worked with the elephant, yeah. No, I didn't know.
Oh, damn it. Why
such
am I so
diva.
Gullible?
Such diva.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so other films are, you know, even more performance-based where, like, there was a film I did a couple of years ago called Life, and it was set on the International Space Station, and the actors had to fly on wires all day, basically.
Oh, wow.
And that's, like, a really kind of niche skill to have. You know, it's a lot of endurance and a lot of core strength. So that was very much performance-based versus the way they look because they're in, like, astronaut suits the whole time. So, yeah.
What's been
really
your favourite film?
Favourite film? I did Assassin's Creed a couple of years ago, I think 3 or 4 years ago, something like that, and I really enjoyed that. It was, you know, I've worked with Michael Fassbender a few times, so I worked with him on that, and he's a great person to train. But also there was some really nice locations the film went on, and I took my family with me as well, so we were out in Malta for, like, 3 months or something, staying in a five-star.
That's,
you know,
a great,
so it was
perk.
Like it was really fun to spend that time with them and to work away, and actually the film was really good from a challenge wise, because I had to train a whole bunch of people to be assassins, so it's pretty cool. Yeah,
that's such a cool
cool
day in the office.
What's it
absolutely.
Like actually working with film stars, TV stars? Are they as diva-ish as we imagine, or are they a bit more normal?
It's a real mix. I'm not going to say
yes
too much
and
more,
no.
But no, there is.
Don't you mention names?
No, I won't mention
any
names.
We'll fill in the blanks.
you know, it's the thing is, you're getting paid to do a job. You're getting paid well to do a job. Mm. So there is, you know, there's an element of your service there that goes above and beyond a personal trainer that's just getting paid per hour. You know,
yeah.
So there are. You have to be quite flexible with the nature of the work. There's a lot of travel. You know, there's.
It's your life for that period of time.
It is your life, yeah. So the hours can be really intense. You know, 4 o'clock in the morning, training session. You know, it can be very intense. And in years gone by as well, with the travel too, that's very demanding to do that. Mm. There's years gone by where I've been abroad for 11 months of the year. So it that's very demanding. But in terms of, I've been really lucky with the people that I've worked with, but there have been a few near misses, I think, on films that I haven't worked
yes.
on. So, yeah.
Very
yeah.
well said. Well, yeah. Let's talk about your book, Fitter Fast, Your Best Ever Body. In under 8 weeks. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, one of the main parts of my business now is online personal training and providing, you know, the tools for everyone and anyone to get in shape. So obviously over my career as a film personal trainer and as a personal trainer in general, I've really developed a skill set to achieve results in a short period of time. You know, with the films, there's always like less time than you need. Yeah. So it gives you a really, it's given me a really good base knowledge and the ability to help people in a short period of time. So that's where I started, like, the online business and that type of thing. And then the book, you know, the book came about basically because, you know, with that I can go to a larger audience and help even more people with really the essentials of what they need, rather than, you know what it's like, you know, in the media, all these stories thrown out every single day, and it's very, very confusing. Mm. And they're nearly always missing the most important points, and actually the only points that really matter they often miss. So this book is all about those points, so that everyone has exactly what they need to get in shape.
So we're actually sort of cutting down on the bullshit. And
yeah, absolutely.
What
yeah,
we
yeah, exactly that.
Do.
Exactly that. So, you know, most diet books are one set of recipes for everyone, which is crazy if you think about it, because why would any two people, you know, why would someone who's enormous need the same amount of calories as someone who's very small? You know,
yeah.
You know, if someone's 7 foot tall and so, you know, someone's 5 foot tall, yeah. very active, activity levels play a part. So there's a number of things that play a part in how many calories you need. And so it takes into account all of those things to provide the right portion sizes, essentially, yeah. so that people can achieve their goals. One of the biggest problems with most fitness books is that the calories are very low. So for some people, they work okay because they can manage that. But for others, it's a real challenge. I mean, everyone's done it where they've undereaten for a period of, you know, period of time or a few days.
Yeah.
It's impossible. You can't stick to it. You don't enjoy it. You're never going to, you know, maintain it consistently.
No. You might shed a bit of weight initially, but presumably that will come straight back on as soon as you go, you know what, I'll have a drink.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I'll have that pizza.
Yeah. So what it does is it you know, it gives the right amount of calories. It gives exactly what the person needs so that they can follow it, enjoy it, still eat food that they enjoy. You know, they don't have to cut out bread or do anything drastic. It's just about energy balance.
So
essentially,
how are you doing that? Is there some sort of like formula?
Exactly. Yeah. So essentially, I use a very complicated algorithm for doing calorie calculations. Within the book, I've done a simplified version that anyone can do very easily. You just put in your weight and a few other details and do a little sum, and there you go. You've got your exact calories.
Yeah.
And then there's 18 different levels of calories so that you find your level and you stick with that. And then as you lose weight, your need for calories decreases, so then you can move down the levels. So it gives you the ability to make progress over a longer period of time versus just following it for a few weeks and then plateauing because that, you know, that level of calories no longer works, essentially.
So going back a little bit to your work in films and on TV sets, because I love that side, it's so interesting. Are you involved in your actor and actress's meal plans and their nutrition as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that's one of the biggest things that I do, is also support that side of things. So often on the films, there's private chefs involved. So they might have a chef living at the house or on set. Not always, but on some of the bigger jobs, certainly that would be available. And so in those situations, I'll provide the chef with recipes, with the exact calories and macros for that person's needs. If the goals are body composition based, so if someone wants to lose weight or gain muscle or gain weight or whatever it might be, then there'd be very specific guidelines for the calories and the macros. If someone's goals are just more general health and fitness based, they can be a little bit more flexible in terms of the calories, because obviously if you don't want to change your weight, then you don't have to worry too much about that side of things. You can you can eat more flexibly. But if you're actually looking to change your body, as you know, most people are looking to change their body in some way or another, whether it be big changes or small changes. And the most important part of that is the food and getting the calories right.
Yeah, and do you find that some of your clients struggle with motivation, or is it quite a motivating factor, the fact that they're, you know, kind of in the public eye? They're quite good at that on their own.
Yeah, I mean, I think that having a trainer there all the time, travelling with you in every, you know,
I mean, love that.
You basically
you'll
can't escape.
Very accountable.
Yeah, you can't escape from me, essentially, as you know, when a film's on, and when, because obviously it's in my, you know, it's very important in my interest for that person to achieve their results, because that's my reputation.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
There's no like place you get hired for film work. The reason I continue to get hired is based on previous results, and therefore you have to do a good job. And so you kind of have to get beyond people's case a little bit if they're struggling.
So it's a bit of a love-hate scenario sometimes.
It can be, yeah. And you can't always be really super nice. Sometimes you have to be quite honest. But I would say that most of the time they are very, very motivated people. You don't get to the top of your game at anything unless you're motivated.
True.
And I think that's one of the most, you know, important things from my point of view, is the fact that they're absolute top of their game, and therefore they work hard with their, you know, dialect coaching, their stunts, their
across
acting,
the board,
you know, across
yeah.
the board, and training just becomes part of the job, basically.
And at the sort of, not lower at all, but the slightly less private chef on call, you know, speed dial to a nutritionist, if you're working on very long days, or perhaps there's a lot of travel involved, do you have to fight a little bit against production who might want to just roll us straight through lunch, or is it usually quite structured? Is it quite a nice
I think so. Most people think that working on, you know, when I'm training an actor for a film, that it's the training is sort of budgeted into the day, it's like planned into the day, and generally it isn't.
Okay.
So generally the training has to happen before work starts or after work. And if someone's in the chair for hair and makeup at 6 a.m, that means we have to train before that. Or if they're...
I bet they hate you well, some
exactly.
mornings.
I know, yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That
absolutely.
Knock on the door. Oh. They're like, no, sorry, not today.
And like,
not
David.
Today, Dave.
Exactly, yeah. And then likewise, at the end of the day, it can be yeah. very, very late as well. So there is still that big challenge of time, essentially. Mm. So the sessions have to be very effective, and also you don't want to train too much. So you train essentially the bare minimum to achieve the results you're looking to achieve. So whether that be reducing the sessions to 30 or 40 minutes in the mornings versus an hour, or whether that be doing a 20-minute session in the afternoon instead of, you know, to make it very, very time effective so that they still have time for everything else. Because like you say, often I do end up battling everyone else well, in the yes. production schedule from and the costume people and
I can imagine
everyone else.
Hair wouldn't be best pleased if you're sneaking off for a sneaky workout and they come back with sweaty hair.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we have to be very sneaky with those types of sessions, definitely.
Sneaky sweaty
yeah,
hair.
Yeah.
Oh, sneaky sweaty hair. You've got to love that.
I've had quite a few actors training in my gym in full costume, in full hair and makeup. They'll come in and do a little bit, not to, you know, make sure they don't sweat too much.
Yeah.
But they'll come in full costume.
I bet you look at this and think, wow, this is my job.
It's quite surreal.
It
that.
Is. Oh yeah, yeah.
You've got like
absolutely.
Robin Hood doing a lap pull down. You're like, yep, this is my
doing
day job.
Doing a stretch.
I had it on when I was working on Les Mis. There was one of the days we had. Basically, the whole cast was in the gym, so all of them. And I was training Hugh at the time, and he was actually he was training in costume. So it was like I sort of took a step back, and it was like there was all of these actors in there, and I was just like, this is really strange.
Did you ask them to start singing?
Should have done.
Yeah,
I definitely. I should have asked for a live
rendition.
Show. Yeah.
Oh my God, that would just be the best job in the world. Really
we are, of
would.
Course, talking about Hugh Jackman. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Just to clarify, just for anyone who has not seen Les Mis, he is quite fabulous in his costume.
Yeah.
And he has a fine set of lungs.
Oh, he really does. He really does. Do you know what? We have a few fitness stories. We're going to keep you to the end of the show, if that's all right,
of
David.
Course.
Shall we? So we've got a few minutes. Should we do your one first? The World Gin Day, because it's gin.
I thought you might like that one. Yeah. So it's World Gin Day coming up. So this links a little bit to what David's been saying about fitting it in with your lifestyle and, you know, not making drastic changes. And
I couldn't give up socialising.
Your lifestyle loves a good G&T, there are little tweaks you can make. So I recently discovered something called rejuvenation water, which contains amino acids, which is what your body needs as its building blocks to recover after exercise and also to repair any muscle tears. It's protein is what makes up everything, really, in your body. David, I'm sure you can hit us up more about this. But this is a water, and it is a flavoured water that tastes great. And I think you can have with your gin. So that's my top tip. If you are going for World Gin Day and you're going for some sort of gin record.
When is World Gin Day? Do we know?
I do. Sadly, I know that it is
so
the
proud.
9th of June.
So I've never been more proud of you. Never been more proud. So is that a good way for people that do still want to socialise and lose weight? Can they still drink?
Yeah, I mean, you can do. Obviously, alcohol isn't the best thing if you're looking to lose weight.
Yeah.
There are some negative effects to it. I mean, often people will overeat if they are intoxicated.
This is
like
what
it's
I've
you know that's that
to,
that is one
do.
Of the one of the main problems.
Yeah.
Also with alcohol, it can't be stored within the body, so you have to use it as fuel. And then therefore if there's any other fuel coming in, your body has to prioritize the alcohol, and therefore that additional fuel from food will be stored as fat. So it does have some negative effects, but there are options for lower calorie drinks, obviously gin being one of them. So you know, I mean, for me, I drink a vodka soda water if I'm drinking, and it's a low calorie option. Also, with soda water, it's
well, in that
you know,
case,
somewhat hydrating.
Might I suggest rejuvenation water because it's the world's first amino acid enriched spring water?
I'll give it a go.
Yeah,
I'm still waiting for like a BCAA infused vodka.
I once went round to back in the days when I was dating, I went round to someone's house and I said to him, do you want me to bring anything over? Thinking, wine. And he went, no, it's all right, thanks. And then he's a PT and he went, all I've got to drink is BCAAs. So if you want anything else. And I was like, no, it's fine. So we had a nice romantic BCAA.
And for people that don't know what BCAA is?
So they're branched chain amino acids. So it's four of the amino acids that are important for muscle growth.
So you'd take that pre-workout, right?
So you can take it pre-workout, intra-workout, or post-workout. It's beneficial at all those times, basically. Yeah.
So Or on a date.
And or on a date. I've not heard of it on a date before.
Did you have a second date with this person?
No, I did not.
Okay, good.
Yeah, sorry.
Was it because of the BCAA?
I quite like the BCAA chat because I'm quite into my fitness.
That's true.
But not that I knew what it stood for, but I knew it was something that fitness girls on Instagram drink quite a lot of, and hashtag BCAA. So I thought, yeah. I have to say, I think it's the only time I've ever actually drunk a BCAA. And it was quite tasty. I think it was strawberry flavoured or something.
Yeah, no, if I was expecting a nice glass of Pinot, it could have shoved that BCAA where the sun don't shine.
If you close your eyes, it could be a rosé. Almost. No, not
doesn't
really.
Doesn't give you the same
Sorry,
kick,
no,
though.
No, you're right.
We've got about a minute and a half. Very quickly, 79% of shakes, so these are like meal replacement shakes, have claims such as protection against chronic diseases. Only 10 products in the UK contain sufficient information on their packaging. Basically, meal replacement weight loss drinks, according to the EU, have been clearly exaggerated or simply untrue. Do you think there's been a lot of meal replacement drinks on
the market? I think it, for a lot of diet products in general, because one shake per day isn't going to affect whether you lose weight or not. Mm. It's your overall calorie intake for the day. So for anything as an individual item to have a weight loss you know, slogan or promotion, I feel that it is a little misleading because actually it's just extra calories. You know, so if it's only less calories,
you have to replace something with it.
Exactly. And so over the course of a day, it's getting your total calories that's important.
It's
so
net.
A shake,
yes.
Exactly, it's
you.
Not one shake or one meal.
Boom. Well, on that note, we're gonna have to go. David, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Brilliant.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
We shall see you next Tuesday from 4 p.m.
We will do.
We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
This past hour, you've been listening to Pitch Talk with Rachel Downey and Olivia Cotts. To listen again, simply go to foodbarradio.com or our app where this episode and all past episodes are free to stream or download. Send all questions, comments or queries to pitch@foodbarradio.com or tweet @foodbarradio.